Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 640. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about some lesser-known places like the Tbilisi Mountains, Fada, N'Djamena, and lesser-known events like the Toyota War as we go to the country of Chad. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen, and let's talk about Chad. I'd like to welcome back to the show Francis Tapon from wanderlearn.com, who's come to talk to us about Chad. Francis, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's an honor to be back.
And we're actually talking from the same state now. You are back from Africa after 5 years?
That's right. About 5.5, if you want to be technical.
5.5, okay. And the original plan was 3 years, as I recall?
Yeah, you know, exactly right. It was going to be a 3-year trip, and then I extended it to 4 after about a month, and then all of a sudden after about another year, then I said, you know, I'm going to need 5. So that's just the way travel sometimes works for long-distance travel. And I was thinking to myself, I should just tell people I'm just off for 5 years. You know, it's a 5-year journey. But then I think to myself, well, people feel really heroic when they go on for 6 months of travel. And for me to just say 5 years and not count that 5.5, 6 months of travel is an enormous accomplishment. And so just throw away those 6 months.
And you came back from your Africa trip with video for a documentary, with the material for a book that you're putting together, with at least 2 strains of malaria and a wife. So it was an eventful trip.
Absolutely, yes. In fact, I got, obviously any 5-year trip is going to be pretty momentous, but going to every single African country, all 54, is going to really add some spice to the journey.
And we should say Wander Learn is a new podcast, which is new since we last talked. We have talked about Cameroon on this trip, and we've also talked about Western Sahara.
Yes.
And you pitched me Chad because this is a big hole in the Amateur Traveler map of Africa. Why should someone go to Chad?
Kind of similar reasons why I'm specializing in your, so far in your Amateur Traveler, in these places that nobody goes to. And it's because, it's true, because a lot of people are just not interested in going to Nigeria, Somalia, or Central African Republic, or Congo, or even Gabon. And so obviously Chad is for quote unquote advanced travelers. In other words, people who've already done the Louvre and they want a little bit more than Venice, for example. So they want to step it up a notch and step up the intensity or the interestingness or the outworldliness. Back in the day when you and I were children, just traveling to another state was a crazy different experience. But nowadays with all the chain stores and chain restaurants and chain everything, there's not as much variety. You can go to Japan and all of a sudden see some of the same. There might be a Starbucks in Japan, for all I know.
Well, there's certainly 7-Elevens.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've been to Japan 3 times. I just couldn't remember if there was a Starbucks. But the original reason why a lot of people traveled 100 years ago, 50 years ago, was to kind of really get out of their comfort zone and try something wild and different. And nowadays, it's a lot harder. You have to travel much either further or just in weirder places, quote unquote, weirder places. And Chad is one of those places.
Excellent. And I want to just say, in case people didn't pick it up already, the 5.5-year project you were on, you spent at least a month in every country in Africa. And so Francis has some basis for comparison of Chad versus other African countries. So what kind of itinerary do you recommend for Chad?
Okay, well, Chad is enormous. And a lot of people say that about their countries, but let me just put that into perspective. It's about 9 times the size of New York State. It's a bit bigger than 3 times the size of California. So add up 3 Californians, and that's, Chad is a bit bigger than 3 Californians. So California prides itself on being in a big state. Well, Chad is 3 times bigger than that. So, and you throw in the fact that there's terrible infrastructure. And so there's no I-5 that's crossing the entire country. Well, there is an I-5, but it's sand. So your progress is much slower. So it feels even bigger than 3 times the size of California. It feels like 20 times the size of California because of the fact that it might take you 2 weeks to just cross from one end of the country to the other.
Now, I'm assuming you got there overland and that we're going to get there probably flying.
Correct. So most people are going to fly into the capital, which is called N'Djamena, which is in the bottom of the country. It's not at the very bottom, but anyway, it's kind of like the southern southwest corner of the the country. It's where the most populated part of the country is, and that's where most people are going to fly into. You're going to have to get a visa beforehand. It's, I think, pretty straightforward for a U.S. citizen or a European person to get it, although it's not fun or easy, but they're probably not going to say no to you. Chad is a pretty open country as far as for tourism and stuff like that, but they just don't get a whole lot of tourists. So you're going to fly in there and you're going to want to check out N'Djamena to begin with. Hotels are relatively affordable and you can get something decent for $50 a night. If you want to spend $100 a night, you'll get fine. You have to be aware that at any moment there can be water cuts or electricity cuts. Usually fancier hotels are going to have backup generators and their own well supply or backup water storage tanks. So you're not going to feel it if you're staying at a hotel that's at least $50 a night, probably closer to $100, at least in the capital. The capital is surprisingly clean and I wouldn't say modern, but if you go to the rest of Chad, it's going to feel like, wow, this is where civilization is. This is where everything is happening. And definitely that's one of the things that set itself apart from the rest of the country, because the rest of the country is desert. And that's the only reason you're going to want to go to Chad. Not the only reason, but you're going to have to love deserts. If you don't like deserts, don't go to Chad.
Okay.
And then from there, the itinerary, you're going to need, I mean, you could spend as little as 1 week, but pretty much then you're going to just see N'Djamena and you're maybe going to go to Lake Chad. Lake Chad is relatively close to N'Djamena, which is about maybe a day's journey away. On the map, it looks like it's right next door, but because again, the infrastructure is pretty poor, it's going to take you at least half a day to get out there, depending on whether you're renting a car or whether you're taking public transportation to get there. And so that's for the week-long itinerary, that's it. But I think it's a shame if you're going to go to Chad to spend only a week. It's kind of silly. The visa is usually good for 30 days, and you should really take advantage and take all 30 days. Chad goes at a slow, slow pace. And so you're going to want to have plenty of time to not just travel, but then to hang out with the people. Everything goes very slowly in Chad. And so you're going to want to go definitely to the mountains, the Tibesti Mountains, which are near Libya up north. That's, to me, one of the best parts of Chad. And then if you have time, you're going to want to see the northeastern part of Chad. And if you really have time, then go check out the southern portion of Chad, which is much more green. So that could give you a thing. And you can do all that in about a month.
Okay. And so if we are doing that, let's say we're going to the north, let's start there. Is that something we can fly to?
Yes, yes.
Because it's going to be a long drive.
Yes, it's going to take you at least a bit less than a week to get to a place called Faya. That's F-A-Y-A. Faya is kind of like the biggest town in the northern part of Chad. But there are flights that go there because, of course, the president's got to get around his country and other dignitaries and leaders and of course, business people. They're definitely not going to take public transportation or any kind of road. But I like taking those roads. Anyway, you can also fly into Zuar, which is near the Niger border, or I think Bardai also has an airport. Anyway, the short answer is there are flights that can take you up. And definitely Faya is the place that you can land into.
And are they expensive if I'm doing that instead of taking the long, slow route?
Well, expensive compared to the budget airlines that you're used to in Southeast Asia and America and Europe. And so you're going to spend, let's say, probably $300 round trip if you're going to take an internal flight within Chad. San Francisco, LA is probably $120, but that same distance in Chad is going to cost you 2-3 times as much.
And let's say we're going in there. What are we doing there?
Again, you're in a desert. And so what you're going to want to do is go with a local 4x4 and then explore the desert. In the Tibesti Mountains, for example, they have some extraordinary mountain ranges. They have the tallest mountain. It's actually a volcano in the entire Sahara. It's about 3,800 meters, I think, or something like that. It's called Emi-Kusi. And it's fun to see it on a Google satellite map. If you see Emi-Kusi, it's just this massive volcano that's just sitting kind of in the northern part of Chad there. I actually climbed up to the top of it. And it's fun because when you're at 3,800 meters, you're going to be incredibly cold, and especially during the night. The time you want to go, by the way, I should have mentioned this from the beginning, you want to visit Chad during our winter time, so in the Northern Hemisphere winter time. So therefore, okay, anywhere between, let's say, October at the earliest and March at the latest. Oh, not March. You could probably go in all the way till April or so. You're going to start pushing the temperatures up in April. But around that time, the nights are quite cold. They can even get to freezing, certainly once you're up at 1 or 2,000 meters of elevation in the Tibesti Mountains. So you're going to have to bring warm, warm clothes. But it's really difficult if you go any other time of year. It's going to be scorchingly hot and you're going to be utterly miserable.
Okay. Well, and you mentioned Emi-Kusi being the tallest. I'm seeing 3,445 meters or 11,302 feet. I can't picture mountains in the desert. as you get up the mountain, do you leave the desert? Does it have any more moisture that it traps from storms that are coming by, or are there just no storms that come by and that's why this is the Sahara?
That's a good, very good question. There are some deserts, like for example, in Southern California, it's a pretty much mostly a desert, but as you go into the San Jacinto Mountains, they start, all of a sudden the tree line pops out of nowhere, and all of a sudden you get these big trees and kind of redwoods and that kind of stuff. And the same thing in New Mexico, you go up into the higher elevations of New Mexico, and all of a sudden trees start appearing, and in the low elevations, they're not there. So the same phenomena happens in the Sahara, but much less so. So the vegetation can appear a little bit more abundant at the higher elevations, but you're not going to get these big trees simply because they just still don't get the level of precipitation that you need to have to grow a big, big tree.
Okay.
I love the desert mountains just because you have this extreme amount of visibility. For example, I hiked throughout the Appalachian Trail, and there you're on top of a mountain and you really can't see more than 2 meters in front of you. So you really have no visibility. But when you go into the desert, you have views nonstop all the time. And the further up you go, even more views nonstop all the time. And so it becomes a real pleasure to hike in those mountains. Obviously, the big challenge is water. You get about as good as you're going to get. I mean, as far as backpacking experiences out there.
Okay.
And there's even, whatever thing that's surprising when you go up into these mountains is that there's wildlife. You'll see like a bucks or antelope that are out there in the middle of, you're like wondering where the hell they get water, but there are little bits of water sources out there, and that's how these desert creatures survive.
Are there particular operators that you would recommend? Are we just going downtown when we fly in and looking for somebody, or did you arrange this ahead of time?
I had my own car, and I've always been kind of independent traveler.
Yep.
But I do have a few phone numbers. And unfortunately, most of these places, they don't have websites or anything like that. They just have a phone number, and you hope that the phone number still works. It's their mobile number. And by the way, the lingua franca of Chad is French, and very, very few people actually speak English. And that's going to be a challenge for people who don't speak French. But they're extremely friendly people. Most people in the desert are more friendly, I think, than almost any other kind of place out there after having traveled all over Africa. And I think it's because in the desert, you're so vulnerable, and you're just on the brink of death. I mean, you're about roughly a little bit, your majority of you is water. And if you don't get water, you're going to die in roughly 3 days. And so as a result, everybody knows that, of course. And so they're going to be a lot more generous and helpful because everybody feels very fragile and vulnerable in the desert, including the locals. And so there's this kind of goodwill and willingness to either share their food, their water, their hospitality, let you stay under their tent, whatever it takes to make sure that on your journey, you're going to be okay. I'll give you one example. When I was up in the northern tip of Chad near the Libya border, because I was climbing the tallest mountain of Libya, which is right next to the Chad border, and I was going up there.
You were trying to climb the tallest mountain in every country, as I recall.
You're right. And so there I was with my wife and her brother, so my brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law had never been on any mountain in his life. And here we are climbing the tallest mountain of the Sahara. Rejoice, who's my wife, mm-hmm. who had climbed several mountains. But we were at a point where we were running low on water and we saw some green vegetation down low. So Mustafa, who's her brother's name, and I decided we're going to go down and check to see if there's water down where the green vegetation is. And then mm-hmm. I told my wife, who just didn't feel like going down and climbing back up again, we'll meet at this designated point up an hour or two ahead. So we went down. There was no water where there was. We climbed back out and she's nowhere to be seen. And we were walking and walking and waiting and walking and waiting. And in the end, I went up and then Mustafa collapsed out of exhaustion. He was just like, I can't go anymore. I really am exhausted. So I said, fine, just sit here and wait. I'm going to go up to the top of the mountain, see if she's somehow up there on the top of the mountain on the summit, and then I'll come back down and get you. Meanwhile, the sun is setting. And when I come back down the mountain, not only did I not see Rejoice on top of the mountain, but all of a sudden Mustafa is gone as well. The guy had not listened to me because I had GPSed his location. Uh-huh. And so I knew that I came back right where I left him. And he was gone. And he obviously became impatient and just decided, I'm going to go. I can't let my sister be out here. The night is falling. I got to go look for her. And I got to give it one last chance, which, of course, is the stupidest thing to do because he didn't know how to get back to his camp. I was the only guy who really had a good sense of, because I had the most experience backpacking, who knew how to get back to the camp. So I went back to the camp, yelling their name all the way down because the sun was setting. I got down to the camp at night, just as I can practically not see anymore. And nobody was there. I was all by myself. And I waited. I put a flashlight outside, kind of like a beacon to kind of like mm-hmm. if they somehow saw the light. And they didn't come all night. And since nobody was there, I got the pleasure of having two sleeping bags. And I was shivering with two sleeping bags.
Oh my gosh.
So you can imagine how cold it was for those two who had to spend the night out in those temperatures with just a jacket and nothing else. And by the way, the last time Rejoice had water was 2 p.m. And so she was going to have to go all night and into the next day without any water. Mustafa had less than a liter when I last saw him. I get up in the morning as soon as the day breaks. I had a GPS device. I send out a signal saying, you know, hey, I'm in trouble. But of course, there was no way the military is going to send a helicopter out there. Emikusi, if you look on a satellite dish, it's in the middle of nowhere. Chad doesn't have the budget to do that. There's no search and rescue that's going to happen within 24 hours. So it pretty much is down to me to try to find these two people. But the problem was this, I didn't have any water either. So to expend a lot of energy to go run around the mountains, and this is an enormous mountain, I can't tell you how big it is, and to just be going up and down valleys and going down ravines and coming up ravines and yelling out their name and using the precious fluid that you have to yell and to scream. You don't realize how much fluid you use up when you're kind of exhaling and yelling. To do all that under these conditions was very stressful. And of course, here's my wife, my brother-in-law. I'm in a position of losing both of them. Miraculously, at 8 a.m. or so, Mustafa appeared at a ridge and he came up and then he's like, where's my sister? And I'm like, I have no idea. I said, Mustafa, you look exhausted, terrible. So I'm going to take you back to the camp. You're just going to sleep at the camp and just rest and just gather yourself because you're in no condition to push on. And I'll look for Rejoice. And on our way back to the camp, I said, wait a second, let me just yell out one more time Rejoice's name. So I yell out her name and all of a sudden, boom, I heard a tiny, tiny reply because I went up to a crest so that my voice could really carry. And that's when I heard her voice and I said, great. And so then around, thank God, it was like still early. It was like 9:30 in the morning. So before the temperatures became scorchingly hot, and that's when you really start losing your hydration. Mm-hmm. So it's super cold at night. Very hot during the day, and it's a tough situation. And we still had to walk back about 25 miles, about 35, 40 kilometers or so. It was still a long way back, but fortunately I had kind of conserved water and gave everybody sips of water. And so we made it back to the place, but that was a near-death situation.
Which is exactly where we're telling people to go to chat.
Well,
or maybe carefully.
No, what you need to do is go with a guide. I mean, we didn't have a guide.
Exactly.
And most people are not going to separate like we did. But it's just to show how fragile you are when you're going hiking in the desert. You're really pushing it. I had a similar kind of experience in Niger where I was alone and I had run out of water and near the worst dehydrated state in my entire life. I'm not going to get into that story, but I will tell you. But then when I went up to the Libya mountain there, because it was after Emikusi, after this Chad mountain, we were a lot more wise and we were like, okay, we're going to really load up on water. And we carried, I think, about 35 liters of water or something like that.
Maybe
37 liters of water. It's a lot of water, if you can imagine how much that is, between the three of us. And we dropped off water on our way, on our path, that we could recover water on our way back. So that kind of made it a little bit more manageable. But anyway, this is a long story. We went to Tekro. I think it's called Tekro or Tukro, which is in the northern part of Chad. It won't appear on any map. It's a basically a military base. It's around an oasis. And there I got there and the guy, he gave me free water, free diesel fuel at one point, gave me a canister to carry it. And he was just incredibly generous. And this was a military guy. And usually, and put this in context, in the other 53 African countries, almost everywhere I went, people would be, especially people in authority, would try to bribe me, try to extract the most amount of money from me.
Try to get bribes from you, rather.
Yes, thank you. And this guy, on the other hand, because we're in the middle fragile desert, he was far more generous and not at all doing the typical practices that you find all over Africa. And by the way, another side point, in Sudan, another desert state, again, the Sudanese, super generous, super open, super hospitable. And so I think it's something to do with that desert culture that really makes people different than other cultures.
Excellent. Do we want to talk anything else about northern Chad, or should we go back down to Lake Chad?
The only other thing in northern Chad, and it's a place I haven't been to, but I've heard about, it's near Fada. So there's Faya, F-A-Y-A, and there's Fada, F-A-D-A. And so there are some petroglyphs that you can find in near Fada, and these strange rock formations, exotic rock formations. And they have some amazing rock climbs. For those who know Alex Honnold, who is a free climber that made a bunch of news in 2018 with his free solo documentary, he also went to northern Chad. And I remember him rock climbing up in there. And so there's probably some YouTube videos that you can see about him climbing up there. But the point is that it's fascinating when you're in the northern part of Chad. In these, you'll find these ancient drawings. These are 6,000, 7,000-year-old drawings in the caves that indicate that there was all sorts of wildlife there. You see pictures of giraffes, pictures of, I think, elephants. And it was basically like the Serengeti. And obviously, these people didn't go to the Serengeti and come back and draw pictures about how their life was in the Serengeti. It's because the Serengeti was right there in northern Chad. In other words, it was a very verdant place where you had a rich animal life. You had cows, and you see pictures of cows all over the place. And so the whole Sahara was like that about 10,000 years ago, but the climate changed over centuries, and eventually it just the Sahara just expanded and became desert. There is pockets up in the northern Chad where you can still see huge, huge herds of camels, and I can't remember the places where the best places to find them, but they like to go into certain oases.
I'm seeing...
And that exists there.
Guelta Darkay?
Yeah, I think that's it, yes.
Okay.
And so it's really a remarkable place to visit. If just people go on to the moon and you see the desolation of the moon, or you see the desolation on Mars and people want to run off to Mars. Well, Chad is like Mars. It's just a little bit cheaper to go there and it has oxygen. You can enjoy the oxygen.
Bring water, but the oxygen is free. Okay.
Right. And there's Earth's gravity is there.
Okay. Excellent. Where to next?
Yeah, Lake Chad is a fascinating place because ever since they've been taking satellite imagery of it in 1960 and they look at it now, the Lake Chad has been slowly but surely disappearing. Obviously, most people attribute it to the growing population, the deforestation, also other climate change issues. So both the locals and the globe are working hard to basically make Lake Chad disappear. And it's not their intention, obviously, but that's the end result. So it's one of these things that you probably want to check it out before it disappears. There's a good chance that it will become just a puddle by 2050. And so it's something that is remarkable. It's not a very deep lake, and it's has a vibrant fishing community out there. The only problem with Lake Chad at the moment in 2018, 2019, is that still Boko Haram is goofing around a little bit in that area. It's not 100% super, super duper safe. However, I don't want to exaggerate the level of danger. A lot of people tend to do that. You just need to take prudent measures, stay in a hotel that's secure. Don't hang around too long there. Don't spend a month in Lake Chad. And then you'll be able to see a very different side of the country by exploring the fishing villages. The ecosystem that exists out there is quite fascinating. And the interchange between Nigeria and Niger, they all come together in this, and also Cameroon. Mm-hmm. So there's four countries that pretty much share Lake Chad. And as a result, it's a great melting pot. The only downside, of course, is, again, it's a trafficking zone for all sorts of things because it's so easy and there's so little control and most people don't have electricity. And so it's not like they can have these big searchlights. If you want to smuggle something in, you can go at night. There's very little stuff. However, I will say that there is some level of security. I'll tell you my deportation story. Do you want to hear it? So basically, I was in Niger, which is in the west side. Uh-huh. And I was driving across all of Niger. So from N'Djamena all the way across Niger, the southern part of Niger, to go into Chad, because I was trying to get my way to Cameroon. And I got a visa finally for Chad when I was in Niamey, the capital of Niger, from the embassy. It took me a long, long time to get it, but I finally got it. But then my car was having a tremendous amount of problems, and it had so much problems that by the time I was able to go with my car, my passport had expired. I had gotten stamped on a French passport.
Oh, okay.
And my passport itself had expired. The visa had not. I think it had not. Maybe it had. I can't remember. Anyway, the point is that I decided to do something I'd done, and don't tell this to anybody, please, Chris, but I forged my passport. You know, in other words, I decided to change the validity date of the visa because they always do it in a pen. They write things down. So if you change like a 6 into an 8 or whatever, you can extend your visa that way.
You know, people do listen to this show, right?
But anyway, so I changed the dates in order to extend my visa to go inside. And I got in and they just let me in. And somehow I thought they were going to look at my French passport and see that it had expired, but nobody did. And I showed it to another person after that and they also let me in. So I thought, okay, great. I'm in the country. I was in Bol, so it's B-O-L. If you look at it on a map, it's pretty deep inside of Chad. If it's on Lake Chad itself. And by then I had gone through immigration, all that stuff. So I was just kind of walking around the town waiting because I was hitchhiking in on a big truck and he had to like refuel or do whatever he had to do. So I was just walking around the town and exploring Bol. And then all of a sudden this guy came up. He was a plainclothes, I didn't know he was an immigration official, but he was an immigration official sitting there in Bol in the middle of the country. So to put that in perspective, it's like going into Denver and all of a sudden an immigration official like Border Patrol like says, hey, what are you doing here by or whatever, Utah, you know, Salt Lake, show me your passport stuff. I'm like, what? I went through immigration a long time ago. Why are you guys asking me this stuff? So I was like, okay, I just showed it to him. And he's just like, you know, but your passport's expired. I was like, oh, okay. And then he like put a microscope and looked at it and looked carefully and says, and you've changed the date on your visa and stuff like that. So you're under arrest. I was like, oh, great. And so I said, can we resolve this any other way? Because I was expecting I'd just bribe him and he lets me go. He says, you know, if you just had a valid passport, you'd be fine because your visa is valid. Because I kind of convinced him that the visa was legit. And I said, really? That's all I need? I just need a valid passport and you'll let me continue on to N'Djamena? And he says, yes. But unfortunately, your French passport's expired. I said, okay, wait a second. Here's my Chilean passport, because I have a passport from Chile, which expires in 2 years of validity left in it. And the same thing with my United States passport, which is also expiring in 2 years. So I said, like, voila, there's two valid passports showing you that I am who I say I am. It's the same guy who's in the French passport. And now you've got two valid passports. You asked me, just show me a valid passport and I'll let you go. And there it is. And it says, oh, yeah, but this is not, but your visa is on the French passport. I'm the same person. You know, you wanted a valid passport. There's your valid passport. And it says, well, you know, I'm confiscating these other two passports you just gave me and you're still under arrest and we're still going to deport you. And so I was thinking, because I've been threatened so many times and kind of held up and all sorts of stuff. Some policemen have grabbed my cell phone and confiscated it. There are all sorts of things that these happen in Africa when you're traveling to all 54 African countries, where you're going to run into this stuff. And 99% of the time, you can always get out by just bribing people, and they'll eventually just relent, or you just beg, or you feel make themselves feel sorry for you. They'll give up eventually. And so I was just sure that this was going to be another one of those times. And so I said, okay, hey, can we work it out? Can we work it out? And then they put me on the vehicle and I was getting deported. I said, okay, I'll just bribe somebody on my way out or anything. Nowhere, Chris, was I able to bribe my way out. I tried and tried and tried and tried all the way. And I was in Niger and they finally give me the boot in Niger. They're going to take me all the way to the capital. And I stupidly got out of the car. I should have just sticked with it, because in the end, that was a waste of time, because anyway. That's a whole nother story. But yes, Chad was the only African country to deport me. But the happy ending is that I showed a different passport when I reapplied when I was in Cameroon to reapply to the Chad embassy. And they didn't know that I had a deportation record. That's the wonderful thing about Africa, is because they're not computerized in most places, there's no way for them to pull up your record instantaneously. And so you can still be a criminal like me and reapply, and all of a sudden they'll look at you with a fresh face. It's nice.
I'm not sure that any of this is what we're going to recommend for listeners of The Amateur Traveler. What are we going to recommend for them? Where are they going after Lake Chad?
You might want to go from Fada. You can go all the way down to Abéché. Abéché is a town that's the biggest town in the east side of the country. That was the town that I departed there. I went to the east. I went into Sudan, mm-hmm. which on the other side of that is Darfur. So it's, if you want to go to Darfur, another hot tourist spot, you want to go through Abéché. And the border is open there. Now it is. And so that's what I did. It's, again, for the adventuresome traveler, that's where you want to go.
Well, let's pause here for a second. You say the border was open and you mentioned Darfur and Boko Haram. So let's talk about safety in Chad specifically as a country.
Yeah.
I know that they have had issues in the past, way back in the 80s, the Toyota War, which I'm going to bet that since I hadn't heard of it, most Americans have never heard of, with Libya in the north there. What are things like right now in Chad if we are careful as we're by Lake Chad?
Yeah, 2018, 2019, things are extremely calm.
Okay.
The only places that are a tiny bit sketchy is near Lake Chad. And the only other place where you might have a tiny bit of caution is along the border, the kind of the southern border there with the Central African Republic. Maybe okay. there's a slightly, but I don't think it's a big deal. The Cameroon border is totally fine. And the Sudan Darfur border is largely fine as well. So look, anything can happen. There's no guarantees in life.
Mm-hmm. We've already said this is not travel 101.
Exactly right. This is for the advanced traveler, and
this is not where you're going to go to the Club Med.
Exactly right. But there is plenty of sand and sun, just like the Club Med. There's sand and sun. But the only place, other place I visited is a tiny place called Fianga. That's Fianga.
Okay.
It is right on the other side of the Cameroon border, and that's because my wife's grandmother lives there. So. My wife comes from the northern part of Cameroon. And when you grow up from the northern part of Cameroon, her mother lived in Chad. She lived in Nigeria. She lived in Cameroon. So it's all kind of a blending. The borders are kind of porous. And just to give you an idea, I went to Fianga, hung out there, and I could have gone back to Cameroon. There was really no border check. The border check was only as you're leaving Fianga to go deeper into Chad. So it just shows you it's kind of like, I don't know. So if you're in Juarez and you want to go to El Paso, it's kind of like they don't check your passport. But then once you're leaving Juarez to go deeper into Mexico, then all of a sudden they check your passport. It's one of those situations.
Okay.
It's a little bit more vegetation down in the southern Chad. So I can't really recommend too much there simply because I haven't spent much time there. Again, this is for the independent traveler. What I would recommend is if you could rent a car, that would be useful unless you want to have the fun experience. Like if you're a solo traveler, I would go and just take the buses and the public transportation, because renting a car is extremely expensive because you're going to need a 4x4. Mm-hmm. And even more importantly, you're going to need to know how to get yourself out of the sand, because you can get yourself stuck in the sand. And if you're all by yourself and you have no skills, believe me, it happened to me myself, so I know what I'm talking about, then you can really be screwed. So I think it's better, you can just take a bus ride. It's going to be slightly slower. It actually will be slower, but at least you're not going to have to do the digging when your car gets stuck.
Okay. Anything else we want to cover before we start to get some of our wrap-up questions?
The key thing I want to emphasize is just the fact that you're talking about a country, again, three times the size of California, population of only 12 million. So they're also mostly Muslim. There are pockets of, I think about a quarter of the population is Protestant. Or
40% is what I saw.
Maybe half.
Yeah.
But I feel the influence. I don't know where those Christians are hiding, because everywhere I seem to have gone, I guess they must be in the southern region of Chad. That's where they must be. Mm-hmm. Because everywhere else I went to, it's a very Muslim country. So if you're a woman, you're going to want to bring a headscarf and always cover yourself up. And if you're a man, never wear shorts. So these are just simple protocols that you want to mm-hmm. abide by. It is a poor country, but a very hospitable country. And you're not going to have to fear for your life. I think you're going to get a very, very different experience than those who are going to, let's say, Tanzania and safaris and mm-hmm. and all that other stuff. You're going to get a, I don't like calling it authentic travel experience, because I think there's authenticity in the Grand Canyon. But I just still think that you should sometimes get out of your comfort zone and go to some place that is wildly different, even if it won't be always enjoyable and perfectly run tour.
Okay. You're standing in the prettiest spot that you saw in Chad. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
That's an easy one. Emikusi, tallest mountain of Chad. It's a remarkable area. And you
probably even
night,
nicer
you
if you
think
don't have to be calling out somebody's name.
Exactly. And sitting there all alone shivering. Where we went, and I could give you the GPS coordinates, there is a hot spring that is there.
And because it's a volcano.
Right next to Emikusi. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of sad in some ways. I mean, it's kind of like you get all excited because there's a natural hot spring out there. But unfortunately, the Chadians, the locals there, have really kind of, I think they could have made it a wonderful touristic destination, but they're just not being good stewards, in my opinion, to be blunt about it. There's a lot of trash. They pick a certain area to do their laundry. It's just not well maintained. And it's kind of sad and disappointing that they're not doing it. Also, by the way, it's not a co-ed kind of jump in. The women have their certain hours they go, and they have to go fully clothed into the hot springs. Mm-hmm. And the men have their certain hours where they can go, and they just have to wear something to cover their bottoms.
Okay. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Chad.
One thing that makes me laugh, only in Chad. Only in Chad will I going to get deported. No, it's probably not the only place I'm going to get deported. But it was really the only place I got deported. And only in Chad did that happen, in all of Africa. And I broke so many laws all over Africa and had so many wonderful opportunities to be deported, and rightfully so. But it was only in Chad where it actually happened.
I feel like this might be the point where I tell you that we've had 3.5 million downloads of Amateur Traveler this year. And that this may have been a bad thing to talk about. If you had to summarize Chad in just three words, what three words would you use?
Well, desert would certainly be one of them.
Yep.
Empty would be another. And it's probably an overused one, but friendly is it comes to mind as well. They are quite friendly people. The only thing to sometimes be careful of is that sometimes they're going to say, okay, you're the foreigner. They're nice to you. And then all of a sudden they say, hey, so can you help out my family or give me money or that kind of stuff?
Sure.
It's something that happens all over Africa. But in general, people are genuinely hospitable and friendly. And that is something that is remarkable and should be treasured.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Francis Tapon. And Francis, tell us a little more about the upcoming book and documentary.
Okay, well, basically, the book is going to come out on Africa Day, which is May 25th. And it's going to come out in 2020, which will be the 60th anniversary. And it should be 54 chapters, so one chapter per country. It's called The Unseen Africa. And it should be a big fat book, kind of like my previous book, The Hidden Europe. Mm-hmm. And it's going to not be a travel guidebook like a Lonely Planet. Rather, it's going to be a travel log. And it's going to help people distinguish between, okay, what's the difference between Chad and Niger and Nigeria and Cameroon and Central African Republic? These are all countries that are bordering the Sahara or in the Sahara. And mm-hmm. how can we distinguish between the two, and to help people through that? And for the documentary that I'm going to be doing, it's again kind of the same idea. I just think that we have a limited perspective of Africa, mm-hmm. and I want to kind of enrich that. At the same time, I think we have a very politically correct notion of Africa. Sometimes we're afraid of criticizing it because people will call us racist and all that other kind of stuff. So there'll be times in the book and in my documentary where I will not shy away from saying things that might be viewed as politically incorrect, pointing the finger at Africans for some of their own problems. But I think it's necessary to kind of make people understand that not everything that's bad in Africa is the fault of the foreigners. Yes, some of it is, but some of it is indigenous and it's the own creation of the Africans themselves. So I kind of that took me 5 years to figure that out. And I think it's a valuable lesson and I would like to share and show some of the evidence of why I believe that is true.
Excellent. And if people want to hear you before the book comes out, you've also got a podcast now, which is?
Yes, and it features this guy named Chris Christensen.
Claim, although that episode hasn't come out yet, I believe.
But yes, so wanderlearn.com, so to wander and learn. That's where somebody should subscribe to the show. If people have some extra time in the day, you can listen to me when Chris isn't talking to your ear. I can say a few words of travel advice.
Francis, thank you for coming back on and sharing with us your love for Africa and your love for Chad.
Thank you so much, Chris.
I got some good feedback on the episode from last week on Botswana. Diane said, I really enjoyed that podcast. I felt like I was there with the sounds of the animals and the excitement when the lion sauntered by the camp. I'm glad to hear that. I was certainly my intention. And of course, if you do want to be there, then join me in Africa in May of 2019 on safari to South Africa, Botswana, and Victoria Falls. And more information about that at amateurtraveler.com/Africa2019. I had a couple reviews on Amateur Traveler here in December. One was from Mateo James, who said, Chris2X is an OG, original gangster, for those of you who don't have cool friends like I have. I had the opportunity to chat with Chris, and he is the real deal in the travel world. Not only is he well-traveled, but he's authentic and careful about sustainability. He truly is one of the veterans in the industry and has paved the way for others. Great work. Chris, keep it up. Thanks so much. And then I did get another review from Woodlands Soul that said, this is a great episode. I look forward to exploring this area during a U.S. trip in the upcoming spring. A quick correction, the name of the Serbian artist mentioned is not Maria Abramovic, but Marina Abramovic, two different names. I am from the area and the difference is more than just a letter. Just throwing that out there. Thanks. And I should comment that if you're doing a comment on the episode, that's better to send that to me in email, because the people who read these won't have any idea which episode this person is talking about. I happen to know it's the Hudson Valley episode, but that's just not the best way to leave a comment on an episode. There's really no way in Apple Podcasts to do that. Or put a comment on the episode. Comment on the episode's even better, because then people who read the episode will get that, even if I don't get around to correcting it in the show notes. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.